Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. I'm here with our co-host, Coach Nick. Nick, how are you doing today?
Hi, Coach Steve. I am excellent. It is a good week.
It is. It's going to be a great week, and it's going to be a great episode of the Challenge Podcast, episode number 43. So we have 42 other episodes, so if you enjoy this episode, you can check out a good full-time work week of Challenge Weekly Show. We can listen to Coach Nick and I talk about everything fitness, health, and the challenge. But Nick, an exciting week in the challenge. We've just had our week two check-in over the weekend, and we're rolling into week three. So we're almost halfway through the challenge. Can you believe that?
No, it's gone so quickly. I think I say that every week, but it is really passing by so quickly. And it's really awesome to see people's transformations already. It's mindset as well. So I'm seeing that across the board, loving it.
Yeah, it's been really great. You know, I've been spending a lot of time on the journals, reading everyone's journal posts. And many individuals have posted photos of their week two progress photos, but then also other photos, maybe photos from the side, maybe photos from the back, maybe photos in different clothes to kind of compare themselves in different clothing, and even just some photos of them in the gym having a great time. And I think you've really nailed it, Nick, where at this stage in week two, most of the changes we see is kind of superficial, as in most of it is really water weight. You know, we don't see really big body fat losses in 2 weeks. The biggest change we see is how much water we're kind of holding. And a lot of that comes from changes in our diet, introducing new exercise protocols. And, you know, if you're in that position, you're 2 weeks in and not noticing any change, that's cool. That's okay. You know, that's not anything that we're expecting in this 2 week period. Probably the biggest change comes from our mindset, like you said, Nick, kind of like how we are approaching things, you know, how we're slowly changing our habits, our routines, our lifestyles, so that we can get into this whole fitness thing and really start to see this big transformation over the next 6 weeks. And then hopefully beyond that, over the next 6 months, 6 years, and beyond that, right? Now, the next thing that I'm going to recommend people to do is just to really start to pay attention to these items that we're trying to track, okay? So first thing that we hope that you're tracking is kind of your food intake. Let that be following the challenge nutrition template, or maybe you're designing your own nutrition template or diet or anything. But, you know, really paying attention to what you're tracking and making sure that you're sticking to a plan of some sort. The next thing that's really powerful to track, and probably the most influential thing to any transformation, is to track your training. So writing down things like the weights that you use, the reps that you completed, how many sets you completed, and then other information, maybe how you're feeling that day, if you're ready to train or if you're feeling really lethargic, or how much effort you put into that session. So let's say you did workout number one in week three, maybe you're doing it today, and you know it took a lot less effort to complete that workout than it did in week one. That's progress, right? Then you might start making those decisions to go, oh, well, maybe I will increase the weights that I use now because it's becoming easier. My body's adapting to it. I'm becoming stronger. So the weights that I use, the reps that I completed, the amount of sets that I did is now easy. I'm going to make it a little bit more challenging. So we're really starting to pay attention to some of these bits of information that we can easily collect. Then there's other areas of information, which I hope that you're utilizing some tools like the daily check-in tool on your nutrition template. So you can track things like your sleep quality, your stress quality, you know, how hydrated you feel, how well you think that you are recovering, because these numbers are really great points of information to track our progress, and then helps us to make decisions about how to improve. So if you're there scratching your head being like, this isn't working for me, what am I doing wrong? I'm sorry, I don't have that answer for you. You probably have that answer in amongst the numbers that I hope that you're starting to collect, and so that you can track and make decisions moving forward.
Very, very true. Yeah, you can't change what you can't measure. So you need to be able to measure something to be able to change it. Otherwise, you don't even know what you're changing.
Exactly. And it's like that saying of, you know, throwing shit at the wall and hoping it sticks, right? And I see this approach so often in fitness, where people want to get involved into it. They want to improve their fitness, their health. They want to lose a little bit of body weight, or maybe build some muscle. And they just start doing things, which is awesome, which is cool. We love doing things. But then we reach that point where we're just randomly doing things without much structure. And that doesn't lead to much change, right? You know, think of it like your career. If you wanted to become a pilot, an airplane pilot, you know, you need to have some sort of structure to be able to become that. You can't just start being interested in planes and then being interested in how airports work and then start looking at aerodynamics and just, you know, starting playing around with lots of different things. You need some sort of structure, some linear path, and then find out where's the next step to take it. And that's exactly the same within a fitness transformation. We need some sort of path, some sort of strategy, and then being careful that we're not just doing lots of random things, because random things lead to random results. We want a really targeted approach to what we're trying to achieve.
That's right. You are flying your own plane and you certainly don't want to crash.
Exactly, right? And, you know, your destination could be anywhere as long as you have a plan to where you want to go.
That's right. I do feel that people, and it's actually fair enough, it's hard in the gym. So sometimes you think, I have worked hard. Why am I not being rewarded? Because we are often taught that, you know, hard work brings rewards. But if you are misdirecting that work, sometimes it doesn't bring the rewards that you might like, because you might not know how to actually directly go towards what you want. You've got to really identify your goals as well. There's no point in saying, I just want to get strong, when really all you want to do is get lean. So you need to identify your primary goal, because they have different runways. Runways.
I like that.
Thank you very much.
We are in week 3 of the challenge, halfway through, and many individuals are starting to look beyond this challenge into our next challenge. So as you're aware, we've got our good friend, the Christmas holidays coming up, and then we're rolling into 2022, and I'm getting excited for Tuesday, the 2nd of February, 2022, and coming into the January challenge next year, we'll be starting off the next challenge, which will be a 12-week challenge towards the end of January. Now, many of you scratching your head, why does it start at the end of January as opposed to, you know, New Year's resolution, 1st of January, why aren't we kicking it off there? Well, we find through our experience with running the challenge for over 10 years now, that many individuals are, you know, on holiday mode through that January period. Let's say their kids are on holidays, they're actually traveling, they're overseas, they're doing something through that January period. And it's not until we get towards the end of January that we're ready to commit to something like the challenge. So that's the reason why we run it towards the end of January. And this is probably kicking off around that Australia Day period. So we haven't actually set a date in stone, but we are introducing that prep week again. And we are introducing the 12-week challenge again, because we've run our little experiment of the 6-week challenge, worked out to be a great success. However, from feedback from individuals, we are reverting it back to that 12-week model, which may be helpful for some, which may be a little bit frustrating for others. That's okay. 12 weeks, great time to transform our body, get some really great results and some long-term habit changes so that we can continue that fitness journey for life.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. But also with January is just a thing that doesn't really exist. Often, you know, even if you're ready, sometimes your family might not be ready to help support you. And that's a big deal for your journey. So people might still be in holiday mode. You might catch up with friends for drinks. You know, the kids are not at school yet, so you may not have to structure lunches and do the shopping as rigidly as what you normally would. So, you know, January passes very quickly. Before we know it, we'll be at that sort of end of January anyway. So enjoy and then commit.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know about you, Nick, but January always seems to fly by for me. Before I know it, it's like February. And I'm like, where did January go? How are we in February already, right?
I know. And look, this year, I think all of us are just going to be able to enjoy being able to catch up with friends and possibly travel to those places that we kept booking but we weren't allowed to go to. And so let's just take a deep breath, enjoy ourselves. You can still keep your walking up. You can still do your weights. You can still eat well, but yeah, just have a bit of a break from that rigidity and the fact that this is a competition, and then hit the ground running at the end of January when the kids go back to school and when you're probably back at work as well, and just kick butt then.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just touching on that point, Nick, about like having a rest, right? Many of us join the challenge. We want to do back-to-back challenges because there's a little bit of fear inside of us that if we stop doing something, we won't continue doing something. We hope that in the challenge, you know, you are giving it that really 100% effort, right? Something that is of a high level of effort that we can't really sustain for a really long time. If you feel that you can just kind of go through cruise control through the challenge and then through the breaks between the challenge and then cruise control through the next challenge, I wonder how much effort you're putting into it, and if that effort is enough to see a change in your body. You know, you're just kind of like spinning the wheels. You're not really moving into a destination. And, you know, anecdotally, myself, there are times when I'm going like hard in my training, you know, training at that 100% effort, and not just effort as in the gym, but like mental focus effort. And then there's other times where I am kind of just spinning my wheels, just kind of like just going through the motions, but allowing my body, my mind to kind of just rest before that next bout. And that is really like periodic training, and that is successful long term. And you see it in athletes, right? Imagine like an Olympian athlete, they're training leading up to the Olympics. Gosh, they're training at literally 100% of their effort capacity, but they can't sustain that for a really long time. That's a high level of mental effort, physical effort, emotional effort to maintain that. So there are seasons where there's on season and then there's off season. And we do see that in the fitness space, because you can't possibly train at 100, literally 100%, or be focused 100% forever. There are times where we can kind of lull into a little bit of cruise control and then go back into, you know, acceleration mode. So if you are feeling a little bit fearful over this January period, I want to say that it's okay, right, to take a step back where maybe you are just kind of going through the motions. Maybe you do decide to not track your meals religiously, but still not take the piss, right? Don't be a complete asshole with your food, as Nick says. maybe you do focus on getting your steps up, but maybe you don't track it on your watch. You just try to do, you know, one walk a day around the block, which might take you like half an hour, right? And then maybe you go to the gym and you kind of explore different movements, different exercise. Maybe you do a group fitness class, try something a little bit different. You're going through the motions, but you're not working towards a hard goal. And that's okay, because we're resting, we're recovering, we're giving our brain a little bit of a break. Because then when the challenge starts in January, whew, you're ready to go at 100% and really give it your all, because it does take a lot of physical energy, mental energy, emotional energy to complete the challenge, especially when we see some results that our top 10s achieve, or heck, anybody in the top 50. This is a result that people put strong and hard amounts of effort into to be able to achieve. So give yourself that break. You earned it. And, you know, fitness isn't going anywhere. You can always come back to it.
Definitely. I'll just quickly tell you a story about that. We go to Phillip Island every New Year's, and for probably the first 2 years that I did this with the family, I actually was one of those people that would go straight to the 24-hour gym and sign up, and it would be like for that week I would get up at 4 a.m. and go and do my weights and then come back and the family would still be sleeping. And do I remember doing that, and did it really benefit me? No. What I remember is the holiday times when I've actually relaxed, when I've slept in, gotten that rest, gone for a walk with the family, not being tired for the rest of the day because I smashed weights in some gym that I didn't even want to be at. So just remember, live your life and be present in the moment as well, because it's not going to count down the track.
Yeah, yeah. And I think those memories that you're talking about, Nick, like they're those memories that push you a little bit further the next time you're in, you know, on season, right? So then you go, okay, well, if you think about that, where's the better investment right now? Do I spend time with my family, get these amazing memories, so that when I am back on season, when you are prepping for your next competition, when you are training for the next long distance events, triathlon, whatever it is, you know, you have these memories that, you know, can drive you when the going gets tough, which is going to happen. But if you are kind of in cruise control the entire time, you know, you may miss those memories. You may be tired mentally, emotionally, fatigued. So then when it's go time, you're like, I've got no go, you know, I've got 60%. That's all I can give you. You're asking for 100. I'm sorry, man. I got 60. And then you go, well, that's a missed opportunity. So there's some things to think about where you invest your time over the next couple of months.
Definitely. Just have a think. That's all we're saying.
Now, Nick, let's move on to our non-scale victories for the week. So we love our non-scale victories. They're a great way to look at other areas of fitness, our transformation, other than, you know, what's happening on the scales. So Nick, I believe you found a couple for this week. Would you like to kick us off?
Yes. Well, shout out to Jackie Deakin. I just did a podcast with her last week. She came runner up in the last challenge, and she's got a very strong work ethic in terms of getting to the gym because she's a mum and has a business and all sorts of stuff. So she gets up super early. I'll chat about that later. But Jackie says, look for all the positives and NSVs, not just the scales and photos, strength, energy, consistency with your training and nutrition, resisting temptations, better sleep. So just everything that we just discussed, basically Jackie has said it for us as well. I'm sure you'll be able to name a few. Stick at it, guys. End of next week will be the halfway mark. So, basically she's just saying all the things that we were sort of just alluding to. And that's somebody who's actually a champion within this challenge. So we should listen to her. They leave clues, don't they?
Absolutely. I love Jackie's transformation. You know, I feel like I've watched Jackie over the past 12 months on our Facebook support hub, right? That social group. And, we see that transformation in Jackie where she's built some muscle. She's become a little bit humble, where she's asking questions on things like Technique Tuesday, engaging with other challenges and, you know, forming those social bonds with people all across the country. And now she is really a champion of the challenge ethos of, you know, just getting it done. She's waking up early, going to the gym, looking for non-scale victories. And, you know, she looks so strong now, right? She looks so muscular, like she looks amazing. So congratulations to Jackie, if you're listening to this, and a great role model for lots of women out there.
Absolutely. So the next one I've got is Sarah Perry. So Sarah says, non-scale victory, NSV, body composition has changed from the last six-week challenge. Yay. Picked up my wedding dress and I look and feel amazing. I can't wait to see the results from this six-week challenge. Happy Monday, everyone, and best of luck for week two. So, she's pretty cool. And, like, that's a big event, you know, your wedding. So that's a goal that she set, to look as good as she can in her wedding dress. And good on you, Sarah. That's lovely.
Yeah, that's awesome. Congratulations, Sarah.
Mm. And now I've got our friend Tony. So Tony Abernathy. Now, he has also been in the top 10 before. So there are a few champs in this one. And he says, week two check-in done. Time to look back where you've come from. What a crazy ride since May. I don't recognize me. And I've got to say, we don't either, do we? We look at Tony and we just think, how amazing. This program really does give you the tools to kick ass. How good is that? And Tony is living, breathing testament to that, because he's also now doing, a build program. So he wants to build size and strength. So that's awesome. You see that he's spent the time getting rid of that excess body fat, so then his body's so responsive now to gaining muscle. And Tony's often asking questions about his rows in particular on the Facebook group. So that, once again, you know, it's success leaves clues, doesn't it?
Yeah, I remember doing a podcast with Tony. Lovely fellow, great guy. And hopefully we can do another podcast with him, because that was his goal. He wanted to do a second podcast with me, hoping to get into the top 10 again. So I hope that you can, Tony. Keep training hard. I know that you're introducing running and doing lots of chin-ups, and hopefully we're training our legs a little bit more. But I love that you are looking at improving your technique, and we've had some conversations about your rows on that Facebook social hub. So congratulations, Tony. Keep at it, mate. You're gonna get it done.
Absolutely. You've got all the support in the world from us. We love people such as yourself, you know, that are open-minded, questioning, and then just realize that it is a journey for all of us. You sit back and relax and enjoy the ride in a way. So that's our favorite type.
I've got a couple here, Nick. So my first ones that I found on Instagram goes to Andrew with the handle My Max's Adventure.
That's
I love cool. This from Andrew, and he seems like someone who may not have had some social media prior to the challenge, and he's gone and created an Instagram called My Max's Adventure, and I believe he's created a Facebook account as well, I think with a similar name, My Max's Adventure or something along those lines. And I think he's utilizing these social platforms as a little bit of a journal, a little bit of accountability to, you know, some sort of higher purpose. And that could be to the ether of the internet, or, you know, to the social connections that he might make throughout the challenge. But I think when you make yourself accountable to something, I think that's really cool. We see some really great results. And, you know, when we look at some of the statistics about those who are most active in our Facebook group, those people are often ones who you champion really great results. So, you know, if you're sitting there scratching your head about, oh, how can I get the best result possible? My advice is to commit yourself to a higher purpose. Let that be a brand like the Max and Maxine Challenge, maybe to accountability like the ether of the internet or something like our social groups. But once you kind of make yourself seen and submit to this higher purpose, you know, that's when we can see some really great results. And I don't mean to sound like super culty or anything like that, but you know, success leaves clues. And when we see people who really, you know, commit to something, we get some great results. And here's someone like Andrew, and he writes that he's feeling good. He's down a couple of kilos on the scales. He's eating well, training well. Work's thrown a few curveballs in this week, but all in all, it's been a decent start to the challenge. 4 weeks to go, and hopefully some results I can be proud of. And I hope you get there, Andrew, too, some results that we're all proud of. And mate, we're all proud of you for putting in energy and effort towards making these changes in your life already.
Absolutely. I love it. That's really good. Really good goals, directions. And yeah, just that making yourself accountable. Really good.
The next one here goes to Karen Wolfall, and this was in the journals. And she writes, week two of this challenge, and I'm loving it. I'm feeling more confident and talk less and move more. It's a slow process, but the time is going to pass either way. So I choose to just do the work and follow the process. I love this, Karen. You know, I love that idea of you know, talking less and just doing more, because you know, our actions speak louder than words. And I've been a culprit of that, where I say, oh yeah, I'm gonna do this, but I don't actually do it. And I think we've all been there. And I love that you've made that decision, Karen, because you're right, life's gonna pass in the next 6 weeks if you do something or not. And she's choosing to do the work and then committing and following the process. So congratulations to Karen.
I love that. That's one of my sayings to myself, time's gonna pass either way. So I still use that daily.
I love that. Yeah. The last one here goes to Leslie Meadows, and this was on the journal as well. And she writes, diet break today to attend high tea lunch. Went really well and didn't go crazy. Very happy with my discipline. Otherwise, feeling well, minimal body soreness, still on a streak with my steps, consistently hitting the 10K. Congratulations, Leslie. I love this. I love this idea of this, where she still wants to enjoy the things that she wants to do, such as high tea, and she's chosen to have a diet break, which is a feature that's built into your nutrition template, and that aims to take you back to maintenance calories. So we're not taking the piss, we're bringing ourselves back to maintenance where our body weight is stable. You get slightly a few more calories for that day, and she's gone and enjoyed her high tea lunch, and she stayed disciplined through that experience. So she hasn't gone overboard. She didn't need all the macaroons and all the other sweets that comes with high tea. I've never really done high tea, but I'm assuming there's lots of sweets and cakes. But congratulations to Leslie. Keep your streak up, continue the 10Ks, and we're excited what you can do over the next 4 weeks.
That's brilliant. Love the fact that you're still able to socialize. That's going to just breed longevity, because you can't do something where you can't ever do anything with anyone ever. It's just not going to last for you. So that's brilliant, Leslie. Well done.
Congratulations. Nick, have you done high tea? Have you frequented a high tea?
No, I have not done that. I have not done that at all. I'm drinking my jug of dandelion tea out of my measuring cup. I'm not a really like a sort of a scone socializer. I don't know. It's something like I wouldn't pick that as my thing. It's not my jam. Get it?
I was going to say I've got a buddy of mine who loves to go on what he calls his re-sconnaissance. Okay. So what he does is he and his partner, they go out, well, before lockdowns, go out to different parts of Melbourne and they search for the best scone in Melbourne. Re-sconnaissance, he calls it. I guess that's his jam, right?
Yes, that is his jam.
Yeah, that's his jam.
Look, the thing is, I can see why it would be appealing for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Especially those orange scones are really appealing.
Uh-huh. Get it?
Yeah. Didn't got it. Okay. But look, talking about high tea, if you frequent high tea, let us know what high tea is like. What is in high tea? I'm assuming macarons. I don't know. I'm picturing like a tower, and there's like little sweets on the towers, right? You know, like a little multi-level like thing going on. And of course the tea is there as well, because it can't be high tea without tea. Unless I'm really wrong.
No, I think that's right. And I think that there's mini sandwiches, and I think it's just a decadent kind of a thing. That you do, and probably quite sophisticated, and you probably get dressed up for it.
Could you do activewear high tea? Is that a thing?
Yeah, you probably could, but I bet you people get out of their activewear and like fully just go ham.
Yeah.
Ham on the jam.
Ham on the jam. Well, what if we do a challenge high tea? We rock up in activewear, we have like a protein shake instead of the tea, and then we have just a fruit platter.
That's cute. I like it. We can have a couple of the burn bars and the things that we do when we're in the office.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, we can get the burn bars and then chop them up into little cubes, maybe like little toothpicks. We feel a little bit sophisticated. Yeah, all right. Well, what a fine gentleman. So sophisticated. Yes.
I quite like it. And we can put some grapes on some skewers as well.
I think that's a really great idea, Nick.
Mm-hmm. I don't know when we're having this or where or how.
All right, Nick, let's move on to our Coach's Corner for the week. So the Coach's Corner is where Nick and I offer our tip for the week. Nick, would you like to kick us off today?
I would. So today I'm just going to have a bit of a chat to everybody out there about some things that I've observed from interviewing a lot of the top 10 women in the podcast over the time that I've been doing it. I will call them champion traits because it doesn't mean that you have to win at everything. It's just about winning your day, and it's about being the best that you can be and getting to the best result that you can do for yourself at that time. So that's why I'm calling it champion. I'm not saying you have to win an Olympic medal. So some traits that I've observed, these people all have a few things in common. I've noticed this, and you would have noticed from your ones as well. It's just, it stands out. It doesn't really matter where they've come from or what their routines are like. These are the things that they do. So as for the women, I've noticed, and I'm sure it's true for a lot of the men as well, getting up early, super early. Now, I'm not saying that you have to do that, but I've noticed that these women that often have full-time jobs, children, and also want to, you know, get abs, they get up early. So they're like 4 a.m. people. I wish I'd have known them way back when I started, because that's what I did as well. And I think it was something that, I think it's when you are determined to make time for something and you realize that that's the only time that you have, you find a way. So these people get up early, they have their routine, and they get it done. The other thing was, I noticed for the really top people, no compromise on the quality food and not attaching emotion to it. So it's basically what's on the plan, no more, no less, and not worrying too much about it. So just using it as fuel for their workouts or recovery. So no emotion to it, not going, I can't believe I have to have this much rice, or I can't believe my plan says I don't have enough protein, or those sorts of things. So taking the emotion away and just going with that and prepping it and getting on with it. So because if you start to overthink it all and attach too much emotion to it, that takes up a lot of energy. So they didn't waste their energy doing that. The fire is lit in them and they want to change. So that has to come from within. That really, from what I've noticed from each and every one of them, it comes from within. It's not an external thing. It's something that motivates them, and they've decided that they want that change, and that's how it's going to be sustainable. Because at 4 a.m. or if it's nighttime, if it's the other way, no one's going to drag you in there, and it's very, very easy to switch that alarm off. So they've made that choice. And that fire is lit within, and there's no compromise on that. The other one that I noticed is, even though we talk about abs, and it's a bit of a sort of bit funny, because you know that when you get super lean and you've got everything under control, that's when they happen. But these people are often motivated and training for reasons beyond their looks. So their why is set and it's strong. It could be to, you know, be healthier. It could be because of things that have happened within their family where they feel that they want to be able to step up to the plate and be more present, so therefore look after their body. It can be that they just want to be strong, you know, and often the thing is with getting strong, that actually then sort of filters into your physique as well. So it's not just always about the diet. It's about, like, if you go for getting strong, if you go for the numbers, you know how some people say it's all about nutrition. Of course, it's very tight, but you have to have that why. If you just want to get into the gym and see those numbers increasing and you're not afraid of weights, which these people have decided that they're not, it opens up a whole new world to you. So it's the thrill of the gym. I've noticed that all of them love it, embrace the weight training. So there's not one of them that I've interviewed that's like, no, well, I don't touch the weights. It's all about the weights. So now we've got, they've told others. So this sort of touches upon what we were talking about before. They've told others what they intend to do, and they've involved others in their routine. So whether it's their family, a couple of them have had their hubbies help with the meal prep, or they've involved their families in the meal prep. A couple of others have told the Facebook community they've been very involved. They may have reached out to certain groups within the Facebook and just put themselves out there a little bit more, just as we were talking about before. So that's actually a champion trait. That's why it's filtered through our whole podcast today, but that's why we've got, you know, Jackie Deakin talking about that. And then we said, you know, she's quite good, just, you know, a little bit of an understatement. And that's why, because she's actually now put herself out there. What, there's just that magic trick with doing that. It sort of makes you feel accountable. It also makes you connected. And then people will ask you for advice. So it actually makes you feel like you are helping others as well, which is something then that you realize that you've got to keep going. If you're going to help someone else, you can't just throw in the towel, because what would you tell someone else to do? Okay, so they ask questions, like you said before, about Tony and Jackie, you know, that they're a bit humble. They ask questions and they take personal responsibility. So they're not going to say, I can't do that movement. They're going to say, why can't I? What can you see in this? You know, Coach Steve, help me. You know, Coach Nick, help me with this technique. I don't know what I'm doing, but I want to get better. I know it's going to be good for me. So I like that. And they have a pre-workout routine, which is interesting. I have know a lot of people that just have a routine. So they'll get up. They may have something to eat. They'll respect their bodies in that way. They may have a stretching routine or something that they do before they get into the gym. So they're very present. So I invite everybody to think of that as well. It doesn't have to be like fully like 80s aerobics stretching over a bar with like a sweatband on your head and taking up the whole gym. It's just what are your rituals to get yourself engaged in the gym? Is it putting away your phone? Is it switching it onto airplane mode and just looking at your program? Is it listening to a podcast? What is your pre-workout routine to get you in the zone? And they prioritize recovery. So you don't often find many of these champions going, well, I did more than the program. You don't hear that very often. You don't hear people going, well, that wasn't enough for me and I didn't get sweaty, so I added more. They often say, I did everything that I needed to do, nothing more, nothing less. So there are a few traits that I found and I wanted to share them with everyone, because I think that honestly, if something's missing in our own routines, we can look back at these things and go, hang on, I can work on that.
I like it. I think you're right. You know, success does leave clues. And if you're looking for ways to find out what is successful, you can check out some of our interviews with previous top 10s. And there are common themes. And, you know, Nick, you've nicely summarized many of them. But as you start listening to them, some of them start to sound a little bit repetitive, where you hear the stories and you're like, wait, I heard that story from another top 10. And these are like same strategies that people implemented and they became successful. So if you're looking for ways to get the most out of the challenge, be competitive in the challenge, or get the most out of your fitness transformation, you know, get that six pack, lose those extra kilos, get that, you know, one rep max on a deadlift that you've been striving for, Go check out some of our interviews with previous top 10 finalists, because success leaves clues and it's there. And you can listen to it while you're training, while you're getting your steps in, while you're doing your meal prep, while you're driving to work. There's ways that we can get that information in and learn from some of our previous winners.
That's right. Learn and then apply it to your own situation as well.
Now, Nick, I want to talk a little bit about steps. A little bit about steps. Now, when we talk about transformations, when we talk about things, when we talk about coaching an individual, some individuals get into that situation where we give very offhanded advice that isn't really helpful. You know, we kind of highlight the problem, but don't really offer a solution. And a common thing within body transformation is this idea of, hey, you just need to eat less and move more. Which is nice. You've highlighted the overall strategy, but you haven't really given any actionable things. And sometimes I've fallen victim to this within my own coaching, or within my own advice that I give to people, you know, day-to-day life, where, you know, you highlight the problem, don't really offer a solution or a strategy to achieve that. And I want to talk about strategies to increase your step counts. Now, this mainly stems off a conversation that I had with a challenger on the forum who was working a very sedentary job, and they were wanting some ideas about how they can get more steps in throughout the day. Now, you might be listening to this and going, well, that's easy, just go for a walk. And that's nice. You've highlighted just one strategy, but for some individuals, that is just not fathomable. Okay, so we want to find ways that we can slowly introduce more steps throughout the day so that we can increase our overall energy expenditure. So firstly, talk about why. Why should we respect the steps? And that's a nice hashtag that's going around, respect the steps. The first one, which I just said, is that our step count is one of the most adjustable variable within our metabolism, our energy expenditure. So if you're one to put your hand up and say, I have a slow metabolism, maybe this is for you. Maybe you need to find ways to increase your overall step count, because we know that our step count influences our NEAT, our non-exercise activity thermogenesis, which influences our total daily energy expenditure. So by doing more steps, we're expending more energy and really tipping the scales between our energy in and our energy out. We also know that going for a walk, increasing our step count, is really good for that recovery side of things. So it increases our blood flow. So if you've had a really hard session, let's say you've smashed legs on a Monday, but then on a Tuesday you go for a nice leisurely walk around the block, that blood flow is really great to decrease some of the DOMS that we're feeling, and also promoting some recovery in an active role when we're going for a walk. Within a rehab setting, things like lower back pain, one of the best rehab exercises for lower back pain is going for a walk. So if you are experiencing some lower back tightness, maybe some tightness in your hips, other areas of, you know, non-specific pain in your body, try to go for a walk, get your steps up. You may find that pain slowly dissipates and your body starts to recover again and rehabilitate yourself. Next, we know that it's a very low form of cardio, low form of exercise. So we know that you can either go for a run or go for a walk, and it kind of expends the same amount of energy throughout the day when we kind of equate the distance or the total amount of steps. So if you go for a run, geez, smash, 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 you really feel it in your ankles, your knees, your hips, that low back. Or you can go for a walk. It doesn't apply a lot of stress to the body, and we can also hit the weights really hard. Other things that we might not think about is the mindset type of things. So going for a leisurely walk or increasing your step count can increase our, you know, overall mindset, decrease our stress, increase our mood, and our productivity. So if you're feeling really overwhelmed with life, if you increase your steps, you may find that you experience this mindset shift, which is really powerful. And finally, something that we don't think about is digestion. So when we think about digestion literally in the stomach, we have this kind of like chemical digestion where, you know, our stomach acids break down food, but there's also this idea of mechanical digestion. So the stomach actually contracts to mechanically break down and digest food. One way we can improve that digestion process is by increasing our step counts and helping to digest our food. If we digest our food better, we may feel more energetic, and, you know, have better bowel movements, gastrointestinal things happening. So we want to increase our digestion so that we just feel good in our body. So I've spoken about why we want to increase our step count. Let's talk about some strategies. No particular order. These are some things that I have suggested to individuals in the past to increase their step count. So the first one, a great one, really easy, is to introduce a walk either before or after a meal. This is powerful because we link it to a thing that we're doing already, like a meal. And then if we're linking it to that meal, it helps with that point I just spoke about, which is digestion. So if you want a really profound way to increase your overall quality of life, is to go for a short walk. I'm talking 10, 15 minutes, nothing crazy, could just be around the block. So you finish dinner, you grab the kids, grab the dog, everyone out of the house, go for a walk around the block, come back. You probably find that you don't feel as lethargic. You don't want to sit on the couch and binge Netflix, and you want to maybe do something more productive and active after that. So introducing a short walk before or after a meal, let that be breakfast, lunch, dinner, something like that. The next one is to have some walking gear really accessible at your house. So let's say shoes at the front door or a jacket at the front door, or if you are taking the dog for a walk, you have the lead at the front door, something making it really easy so that when you do decide, okay, I'm going to go for a walk right now, it doesn't turn into a half an hour ordeal to get everything ready. It turns it into a 30-second ordeal to be like, all right, walk to the front door, put your shoes on, put your jacket on, out you go. Dog, you're coming to, grab the lead and bring the kids with you, and your partner can have a little rest at the house or bring them along with you, whatever it is. So making it a really easy process to get out the door. The next one we're talking about in the gym setting. Now, we're not a big fan of doing lots of, you know, formal cardio in the gym. We want to prioritize our time doing resistance training, but introducing, you know, let's say 5 or 10 minutes of a light walk at the gym can really be a really great way to increase your step count. So doing a short walk for a warm up in the gym, or a short walk, just a little bit of a cool down at the end of your session, can be a great way to add, you know, an extra 1,000 steps to your overall daily step count. Talking about our workplace environment where we are often, you know, sitting down for long periods of time, here are some strategies that you can introduce in your workplace. So the first one is that you can go for a walk at lunchtime. So maybe you've had your meal and you can go for a short walk around the block instead of sitting there in the break room, you know, scrolling through your phone or whatever else you do. It can be a great way to get out of the office, rejuvenate, and you come back in and you get that work done. So going for a walk at lunchtime can be really cool and a really great way to maybe bring some of your colleagues with you, and you can bond with some of your colleagues in a different way outside of that workplace. The next one, a little bit of a cheeky one, is you can have a big water bottle at your desk. And what you can do is you can just drink more water. Drinking more water, you probably find you need to go to the toilet more. So then you're actually physically getting up, walking to the toilet, coming back down. So it can be a way to kind of break up our workday. So if you do find that you're sitting down for, you know, 3-4 hours at a time, unable to get up, if you have that water bottle next to you, drinking water, getting up, going for a walk to the toilet, coming back, you may find that while you're up, you might go to the stationary cupboard, you may go to another area, speak to a certain person, and then come back. So it's a way that we can kind of get more steps in. The next one is to remove your bin at your desk. So, you know, we are in a bit of a paper society still. We haven't gone completely digital. We have some sort of bin at our desk. So if you have a communal bin, maybe in another area of your office, you have to physically get up to get rid of your trash. Instead of throwing it in the bin under your desk, you have to physically get up and walk. So that could be a strategy, is just to get rid of that bin or making it further away from you. Then some really classic ones, such as taking the stairs. So if you've got a staircase at your workplace, take the stairs. You're at the shopping center, take the stairs as much as you can. You can park further away from the building you're going to, let that be the workplace, the supermarket, the shopping center, wherever you're going to, you could park further away. And if you are lucky enough, you may be able to walk to work or commute to work, such as taking public transport, increasing your overall step count so that we can get more steps out throughout the day. So there are a few strategies that are utilized in the challenge, speaking to people and also coaching individuals in the past. And this is now passing on to you, the listener. Think about ways that you can introduce more steps into your day, because it's really easy to do less. It's really easy, especially with, you know, wild weather outside, or when we are on holidays, or, you know, when things get tough, it really is easy to kind of sit on the couch and just chill out, because we like to chill out. We like to conserve energy, but sometimes we have to make active steps to increase our overall step count so that we can increase our energy expenditure, so that we can make positive changes to our body. So there you go. Strategies to increase your step count.
Yeah, I love that. Love it. Especially the digestion one, because I do think sometimes people just say, oh, I'm bloated. And it's like, well, if you move more, everything in your body is going to move more. So that's fantastic. And if you couple that with the water, look out. You will not feel bloated ever again.
No, look out.
That's fantastic. I love it. Yeah, just little strategies, little things add up, tiny little things, just those extra few steps, parking further away, all of those things. But also, yeah, I love the forced weeing one. That's fantastic, because you're never going to get to the point where you go, well, I can't even leave my desk to wee. You know, you wouldn't do that. So you're going to have to walk.
You're
going
to have to, yes.
I love it.
Nick, let's go and answer some questions this week. So the first question comes up, common question. Individuals wanting to eat out, let's say they have a birthday coming up, a celebration coming up, they're going to be out at an event, at a function, at a restaurant, and they're going to eat out. What are some strategies that you would give an individual if they did have some sort of event coming up and they were going to have potentially have a meal that's not on the plan?
Yeah, absolutely. So with this one, there are two schools of thought, because some people listening to this might go, just let the person enjoy themselves. So if you want to go down that road, you don't need any of my advice. But if you do want to stay on track and you want to sort of be able to empower yourself, I suppose, in an eating out setting and learn for life, I guess, these strategies to be able to eat out and still stick to things, because then that means you can include more social events in your calendar, which then means that you're not an asshole, because really, like, you don't want to be one of them. So I'm assuming that people want some help with this, and I'm assuming that you want to stick to a certain structure with your meals and things. So, you know, be my guest if you don't, but here's a way to do it. So many of us in the bodybuilding world, but also probably in the fitness world, are aware that these days, and it's the best thing ever, you can actually look up pretty much every single restaurant that you go to. You can look up the menu before you go. So you can do all of this work before you even get there. So you can be seamless when you get there, and no one even needs to know. Because the thing is, you think that everyone's watching you, but no one cares. It's only if you announce that you're doing something, then people will put their two cents in. So you can do that if you feel like you want people to know, but otherwise you can look up the menu. Now, then from that menu, you can choose what seems like the best option. Some menus even have their calories and macros on there, but let's just say that they don't, and let's just say that you haven't got your head around that. So what you do is you choose things from the menu that are going to be a little bit leaner. So you want lean protein portions. So you want things that are grilled or poached, and that would be fish, chicken, beef. You want to look for those leaner options, and you want to look at what kind of a sauce it comes with and see if you can get that on the side. Now, for me, I will always choose vegetables or a salad. So you know how things come with chips and salad usually, but there's also always an option to put veggies with it, or you can have the salad without the chips. So just suss all of that first, see what fits you. There's always a salmon on the menu. Now, salmon obviously is a little bit higher in fat, but it's probably better to go a salmon than, you know, like a baked giant meat pie or something. I don't know, you know, so choose your poison. You don't have to be exact. So I'll always go a salmon and some salad or veggies. It's a nice way to get some good fats into you as well. If you're going for steaks and things, just make sure that you're going for a leaner cut. But look, think meat and think veggies. Now have a little snack before you go, because you don't want to be so starving that you look at that bread basket and you go, I'm going to eat all of that. You want to do that. You want to make sure that things are not cooked in excessive oil. Now, you can ask. There's nothing wrong with asking. And if people say, well, what are you doing? Just say, I'm doing a challenge. You know, and if anyone's really rude about that, that's probably more about them. So you kind of got to own it and just say, I have the sauce on the side. Is it cooked in too much oil? Could I just get it grilled or poached? And these days, I think restaurants are very happy to help you out, because a lot of people have allergies and special food requirements. So you're not going to be the first person. You probably won't be the only person at that table. So that's okay. You just have to get over that fear. But look at the menu, choose your thing beforehand. For entrees, there's always some sort of you could either get an oystery thing. They're very high in zinc, or you could get like a sashimi, which is a raw fish. I mean, they're probably somebody's listening to this going, ew and ew. But there's always a little salad-y thing that you can get. Just watch out for croutons and sauce with a salad, because sometimes something that is called a salad could actually be way more calorific than anything that is on the menu. Just because it's a salad doesn't mean that it's okay. So if something's got like a mayo dressing, an aioli dressing, you know, crouton-y things, they're things to stay away from as well. Drink lots of water. And if you're going down the alcohol route, that is fine. Like I'm not preaching, but if you're going down that route, just remember that your body's going to prioritize getting rid of that alcohol, burning that prior before it goes into burning off your food. So just remember that And just try and stay hydrated. And do you know what the other thing is to remember when you're eating out as well? If something goes pear-shaped, if you have a dessert, if you do something, if you actually have a good time, get back on track the next day. Don't say to yourself, or if it's a lunch thing, get back on track for dinner. Don't say to yourself, right, that's it. I'm going to now starve myself the next day. It's better to just get back on track. Head to the gym, use the calories, get some PBs, have a look at your bicep pump and get on with it. That's what I would do.
Yeah, I like that. The only thing I'll add is we could take a page out of Leslie from our non-scale victories, who chose to do a diet break while she enjoyed her high tea. So if you are planning to maybe go out, it's a Saturday night, you know, you're going to celebrate your birthday or someone else's birthday or whatever event it is, you may choose to have a diet break on that particular day so that you have a few more calories in the bank. There are some more like an advanced concepts where maybe you could borrow calories from the next day. So, you know, let's say that diet break takes you to maintenance. You could then choose to add a few more calories to that particular day. Look at your overall weekly average calorie intake and then still try to be in a calorie deficit on average throughout the entire week. So there are some advanced concepts. However, these advanced ideas come with their really major risks to them. Many of us, we're humans, we don't have that great of a discipline over ourselves. So if we are choosing to borrow calories and move things around, it doesn't end up being super successful. So that's a risk we need to take. But Nick, I think you nailed it where, you know, if we do have time off the plan, we just got to get back onto it. And often, you know, we have a quote blowout or we have a few more foods that we want to eat and then we kind of throw in the towel and be like, it's over. And we do that over and over and over again, and it's not really successful. So what we want to do is we're going to have these days where we have more foods. That's okay. We're human. It's all about getting back onto it, getting back into it, and you know, enjoying that time where you have a few more calories, because I tell you, that bicep pump is real juicy.
Yeah, true. And also, yeah, if you want to borrow calories, I would do it as like a debit card, not a credit card. So I'd probably borrow in advance and maybe rack up an extra, like eat 100 calories less for a few days and have, just say, have 600 calories extra. But you'd have to be very careful, as you said, and it's a sophisticated strategy and it might just be too much. So the diet break's there for a reason, and that's you can just do that.
Yes. Next question here is about how much strength gain can we expect over the 6-week challenge? This question came out of the forum. And the individual was asking, you know, how much of an increase week to week can I expect with my strength? And this particular individual was coming back after some time off, identify themselves as more of an advanced lifter and what they could expect. And let's kind of break it down using very arbitrary numbers. And keyword is arbitrary because at the end of the day, we don't really know. Okay, so it's not really anything set in stone. And if you aren't progressing at a certain rate, it doesn't mean that you have failed or you're a bad lifter or anything. So firstly, speaking to a true beginner, so someone who's brand new to exercise, never really lifted weights before, how much of a strength increase can we expect over a 6-week period? Well, geez, that could be anything from 10% to 100%. Yeah, so we could double the amount that we lift over that 6-week period. Why? Well, often the amount that we lift comes from technique proficiency. So, you know, let's say you're a beginner, you grab that barbell and you're doing a squat. You know, that barbell, Olympic barbell, 20 kilos, you're doing a squat. Oh, geez, 20 kilos. Maybe next week you go up to 30 kilos and the week after that you go up to 40 kilos. Okay, you've doubled the amount that you lifted over a 2-week period. And that might come from literally you learning how to squat better. We haven't noticed any big strength gain or muscle gain. It's just you became more proficient at that technique. Then if we're speaking to maybe that intermediate lifter, someone who maybe have been lifting for a year or so, but still experiencing linear progress, you know, you could add a little bit more each week. Similar, you know, you could expect anywhere from like 10 to maybe 50% gain in that 6-week period. Often this intermediate person has spent some time getting a little bit more proficient at their technique, but now we're starting to see some more strength gain. And that strength gain is usually from neural adaptation. So neural adaptation, talking about our nervous system, that's the first area where we see development in our strength. So if you're starting the challenge 6 weeks, that first 6 weeks is lots of nervous system response. Our nerves get better at firing, our motor units get better at contracting. then kind of after this 6 week period is where we really start to see some muscle adaptation. So for like this intermediate person, we see some improvements in our technique proficiency. A lot of it comes from this neural adaptation. So we can still see some big increases in our strength profile around, you know, that 10 to even 50%. Of course, depends on our starting point. If you're lifting, 40 kilos on a barbell for a squat and you go up to 60 kilos, that's a 50 kilo increase. But then maybe for, you know, let's say myself, I'm warming up with, you know, 100, 150 on a barbell. So that's a very like, you know, different experience if it's a low number versus a higher number. So percentage is a little bit tricky. Now, talking to an advanced person, if you're truly advanced, we no longer see any linear progression, meaning that you can't just keep adding weight to the bar each week. We're advanced, we're reaching our tipping point. So we're likely going through like undulating periodization where we're reaching highs, we're deloading, reaching lows, reaching highs, reaching lows. So we're kind of going through this wave pattern when we are truly an advanced trainee. Now, many individuals, we stay in that intermediate zone for years and kind of get stuck at this perpetual intermediate. So we don't actually ever, graduate into that advanced trainee. But if you are truly advanced over a 6 week period, geez, depending on the lift that you're working on, because you probably can't expect to see strength gains across all of our lifts. Maybe you're focusing on one or two lifts at a time, and you may notice anywhere from a 1 kilo gain in your lifts. So you're working on like micro plates, or even up to maybe like a 10 kilo gain on some of your lifts if you are advanced. And that could be represented as only, you know, 5% of an increase, especially if we're looking at big numbers. You know, if you're going from 220 kilos to 225 kilos on a deadlift, geez, that's only, you know, 2.5%. Like it's so small, but that's still a big jump for individuals. Now, if you are coming back from an injury or some time off, geez, you can expect some really rapid gains. So, you know, that concept of muscle memory comes back quick. So over that 6 week period, you can expect that you come back to maybe your previous personal best or your previous working weights. So if once upon a time you were able to deadlift 200 kilos, you're coming back to the gym, you want to build yourself back up. Maybe you start deadlifting 100 kilos and you're like, oh geez, over that 6 week period, we could expect for you to get yourself back to that 200 kilos, mainly from neural adaptations. Especially if you've been doing some sort of physical activity, let's say walking, housework and such, we don't lose a lot of muscle. Most of it comes from our nervous system kicking back into gear. So that's the answer to that question. How much weight percentage can we increase each week? It really does depend, super individual to the individual, mainly about technique proficiency and neural adaptations. So there you go.
I love it. No, very good. Very good information for everybody. Yeah. It makes you just think. I was just thinking of all my numbers and other things.
The next one here, Nick, is a question that came up where an individual was focusing on building muscle. I think they were doing the Get Strong program and they're lifting weights and they've noticed that lifting the weights has caused them to put on weight. And they didn't like that experience where they were getting heavier on the scales. And they're asking us, what should they do? Should they continue trying to build muscle because of their putting on weight and they don't like that experience? So what advice would you give this individual, Nick?
I would say, what is your goal? Because you will push on weight if you are lifting weights. I just want to question as to why it's a bad thing. Why is it a bad thing? It alone can't be your only measure. So weight gain alone can't be your only measure of success. So your relationship to gravity on that particular day cannot be your only measure of success or failure. Firstly, if you're brand new, things are adjusting in your body. It can be all sorts of things as to why you might weigh more. As we've spoken about in previous podcasts, it's actually, is it 7,500 calories that it takes to make a kilo of fat excess? So unless you've been eating that, and also then you can't even guarantee if you are lifting weights, some of that is going to go to building muscle as well. So would you be annoyed? This is my question to that person. Would you be annoyed if you had the ultimate physique that you've always wanted, but you weighed more on the scales and nobody knew that number and everybody was telling you all the time how amazing you look. You felt strong in the gym, and everything else was amazing, feeling good. Because that's literally, that's that without, you know, being annoying, that is actually me. That is me. That is how I live. If I was stuck on a certain number, I would still be doing the thing that I did once for a couple of years when I was working in advertising. And basically, I used to walk around Albert Park Lake twice on my lunch break, and that I was way over on my lunch break because it's like 4 or 5K. So it was about an 8K walk, and I would only eat chickpeas. It was random. And so I was like skinny, and, you know, that was great. But I certainly couldn't even wear a bikini and feel happy because I didn't have those muscles that create the shape that you don't know that you're after until you have it. So those curves that you're after, that physique that you're after, the thing that you call toned, is actually created by creating lean muscle mass. Now you are not allowed to skip the step where you feel slightly uncomfortable and things are shifting in your body. It's a rite of passage. And what you have to do is you have to focus on other parameters and benchmarks in the gym to get you through that. So you may, if you notice your lifts are going up, if you notice that your mood has improved, if you notice that your hair, skin, nails, everything else, your memory is good, you're feeling good, people are telling you that you're looking good, then use that number. And you actually sometimes want it to go up. Like, for example, Dell, she'll probably be listening to this. Dell has embraced this, and she's actually put on, I think it's about 1.8 kilos, which is absolutely perfect for, this is her second 6 weeks of muscle gain, and she's wrapped and her legs are coming up, her quads, you know, the quads that you and I like, they're starting to get there, and she is happily saying that. So go seek out Dell Patterson. She'll tell you, she'll set you straight, and it's all good.
I like that. Yeah, look, speaking from like a guy's point of view, and I know it's very like sexist, I guess, you know, often when we see women really emotionally attached to the number and the scale as if some sort of self-worth comes from that number. You know, let's say a guy for myself, I'm currently cruising between like 102 to 105, depending on how much water I drink, you know, if I've gone to the toilet, what foods I'm eating. So I'm gaining weight, which is awesome, right? For some individuals listening to this might be like, geez, that's awesome. But yeah, like it's something that I've been working on for the past, you know, 2 years. And you could see this in some of the challenge videos. So if you go onto the training template, you can see videos that I recorded, you know, 2-3 years ago of me demonstrating exercises. And I look lean, I look almost skinny. And I probably at that time felt like I was, you know, a muscly guy. And now, like, I've put on muscle, I've put on size, and along with that, I've put on some body fat, which is inevitable. But now I'm able to rep out my previous like personal bests. Let's say like the squat, bench press, deadlift, those exercises, what I thought was my maxes 3 years ago, I'm doing that for sets of, you know, 3, 5, some even 10. So like I've gotten so much stronger. My clothes don't fit me anymore. Like I have to constantly buy new clothes. I live in activewear because I'm just putting on muscle, and that's been a hard, difficult process. But then now I know that I'm heavier. So previously I used to think, geez, if I was triple digits, that's a bad thing. Now, if I was below triple digits, that's almost a bad thing. So I'm like, I want to be like a strong guy. I want to be large. I want to be this physique. And I know that once I go through a shredding phase, I'll probably lose, you know, 5, maybe 10 kilos of weight, and some of that will be muscle. That's okay. I'm not stressed about that. But I've taken that emotion away from the numbers. If anything, I'm trying to increase that number because I'm trying to build muscle. I'm trying to gain more tissue in my body. I'm trying to build more of me in the form of muscle. So that's an awesome thing if my numbers are going up because I'm achieving my goal. So if you're doing the Get Strong or Build the Size and Strength program or wanting to really transform your physique, we do need to set our emotion away from those scales and really focus on what we're trying to achieve. You want to build some muscle? Well, you're going to get more body tissue. You're going to get heavier, and that's something we should celebrate. Okay.
Definitely. And if you've ever stood on stage or plan to, I'm telling you, you want to grow as much as you can, because once you start to lean down to those unsustainable kind of body fat levels, always in your head backstage before you step on, you go, oh, I should have put more muscle on before I did this. So that's just a never-ending cycle. But I'm telling you, it's a good place to be. Embrace it. You know, you ultimately you'll be able to eat more, and the more and more you do it, the better your body composition will be, the more wiggle room you have. It's just this rite of passage. Get through it. Get through it to the other side, like Coach Steve was saying about himself, about you, and it's a good place.
The final question here is that an individual is doing the Get Strong program, so also applies to the Build Size and Strength program, and they're asking, should I do more than the program? So we get this question quite a lot in the challenge. You know, we prescribe a certain amount of volume, mainly from one, scientific evidence, and then two, from our own individual experiences, and then three, our own coaching experiences. And what we find is that many individuals come to the challenge and they either have an expectation that they need to do, you know, 2 hours of exercise in the gym 7 days a week, or they come from a previous training program where they were doing 30, 40, 50 sets of exercise per session. So they're doing, you know, 12 exercises, 3 to 5 sets per exercise, and they're in the gym for 2 hours. And when they come to the challenge and they see that the volume is slightly different, if anything, slightly lower. And when I'm talking about volume, I'm talking about the total amount of exercise, the total amount of sets, the total amount of work that we're doing. Now, of course, there's these challenges between what we expect it to be versus what is actually prescribed to us. And there's reasons why we prescribe it a certain way. So the first one is that we find many individuals are simply doing too much exercise, and then that translates over to simply doing junk volume where you're just spinning your legs and you're literally wasting your time. An example of this is, let's say on a Monday, International Chest Day, you do 12 exercises of chest. You do the bench press, the incline press, the decline press, the dumbbell chest press, you do the chest flies, the pullovers, then you smash your triceps. You're doing all the exercises possible that you ever thought of with chest, and you actually beat them up. What we find is that the chest, it can withstand maybe 10 to 20 sets of exercise for the entire week, right? So you're doing 12 sets. Let's say you do at least 2 sets per exercise. You're doing 20 to 25 sets. You're doing more sets than our chest can actually recover from, especially if you are doing a true set of exercise where we're taking that exercise to technical failure. So then you go, okay, well, how are you able to do 25 sets? I don't think that you're a genetic freak. You're not a snowflake. What you're probably doing is, instead of doing 100% effort for every single set, you're on cruise control. You're doing 70% effort or 80% effort on every set. So then you are able to do 25, 30, 40, 50 sets of exercise. So then you go, well, are you really stimulating your body to grow? Are you actually putting 100% effort into every single set where you're taking yourself to close to technical failure, where you're stimulating that muscle to grow? Because you can't possibly be doing all this work if you're giving every single set your full effort. And then there's that, you know, general decrease in effort over the course of a workout. So as you get to set number 20, set number 30, set number 40, you're fatigued, you're tired. You know, instead of grabbing the 30 kilo dumbbells for a chest press, you're grabbing the 10 kilo dumbbells because you're like, I'm tired, right? Then it's just turning into literally wasting your time. You're giving yourself a lot more physical stress, and you're not really stimulating your body. And that stress is something that you have to recover from. And then compounding is, we end up leading to less results because we're doing more work. So the first thing I'll say is that I want you to follow the prescription that we're suggesting, mainly from one, our personal experience, our coaching experience, and then what science kind of is indicating for us. Next, we want to be giving each exercise, you know, our real 100% effort. For me, I do maybe 3-4 exercises a workout, and that is across different body parts. I can't do 4 exercises of chest in a workout where I'm doing, you know, 3 sets, because 4 exercises, 3, that's 12 sets. If I'm doing each set to full effort, I'm gassed, I'm done, like I'm wasting my time, my chest, I might as well go home and do some housework, because that's more stimulating than any weights that I'm picking up in the gym at that stage, right? So there is the concept of junk volume. Here's the caveat, Nick. There is a point where we do need to do more, okay? There is a point where we do need to increase volume, because ultimately, our progress, the amount of muscle that we gain, especially if we are doing Get Strong, Build Size and Strength, is closely linked to how much volume we do. So I'm talking about reps, sets, weights that we do. So we do need to, over time, add more to our program in a particular order. So the first one, we're going to increase the weight that we're using. So if we have a rep range that we're prescribing you, let's say 8 to 12 reps, if you're consistently getting 12 reps, making it easy, we want to add more weight to that, okay? Once we've added more weight, we want to be able to get to maybe that lower range, so that 8 reps or the 8 to 12 reps. Once we've added more weight, we then want to add more reps. So over time, we're adding more reps to get ourselves up to that 12 rep range. If we reach this sticking point where we can't add more weight and we can't do more reps, that's when we can add more sets. So an example of this is if you can do 12 reps on a lateral raise for 5 kilos and the next set of dumbbells is 7.5 kilos, that's a big jump, right? You might not have a 6 kilo dumbbell. So if you grab the 7.5 kilo dumbbells and you are only able to do 5 reps, okay, you're not in that rep range anymore. What do? We can continue to do the 5 kilo dumbbell lateral raise for 12 reps for 3 sets indefinitely and not really progress anymore. Or we could then choose to add a 4th set of exercise onto that. So we are looking at ways to add more to the program, but we're doing it in a strategic way. We're not just doing more, throwing shit at the wall, hoping that that's going to lead to better results, because often that leads to less results because we're just making ourselves tired. We're completing junk volume and we're not stimulating our body anymore. And you're probably better off just going home and resting, getting ready for your next workout the next day, rather than just making yourself tired and not getting anywhere with adding more exercise to your program.
Agreed.
But look, we always fall into that kind of trap where we want to do more, and it does take a lot of self-discipline and maturity in the gym to be able to hold ourselves back slightly. So we hope that you kind of transition into that phase where we are stimulating our body. We're not just working out, we're training. We're not just trying to make ourselves tired. And that involves some sort of control over the amount of exercise that we do, and then being able to give it our all when we need to, and then being able to tone it down when we need to as well.
Yes. None of us are better than the programs. We have to work out how to best utilize what's given to us.
Yes. But Nick, let's wrap it up there for episode number 43 of the Challenge Podcast, Challenge Weekly Show. If you enjoyed this episode, let us know. You could share it on Instagram. You could write to us on places like Facebook or the Gram as well. Or you could leave us a review on iTunes. We always love to share the good word. If you enjoyed this episode, check out the 42 other episodes of the Challenge Weekly Show. And we'll catch you next week for episode number 44.
Thanks, everybody. See you.